Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 28th, 2023, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor. Co-hosts Lavendar and Anastasia, and seems like Anastasia might be having trouble getting in. So what am I going to do? Hang on a second, I'll be right back. Okay, well, that was different. Yeah, Anastasia was having trouble getting into the studio. So tonight, our special guest is Lightstar, who is a pioneering, internationally acclaimed high-frequency attunement artist, celestial channel, author, and starseed ambassador, who is passionately committed to guiding lightworkers, starseeds, and spiritual seekers to discover the truth of their soul. Her groundbreaking visionary attunement artwork and frequency-encoded best-selling oracle decks are infused with sacred color rays and light codes that transmit pure divine inspiration, which help people awaken, realign with their soul, be inspired, and recall their destiny path. Lightstar's transformational music activation is carefully produced and designed to contain light language and toning, specific encodement frequencies, and exquisitely beautiful music that will purify, transform, soothe, rejuvenate, upgrade, and provide activation for you in various ways. She speaks over 20 light languages, which transmit and activate soul memories and healing codes. And her powerful music activation is a source of high-frequency sound healing designed to emit specific encoded frequencies that will cleanse, shift, calm, energize, heal, upgrade, and inspire new levels of transformation for humanity. Over the years, Lightstar's expertise has been honored with remarkable and notable accolades, including attaining 11 traditional and alternative healing and bodywork certifications. Lightstar is also the author, artist, and creator of the popular, groundbreaking, and best-selling Magical Dimensions Oracle Cards and Activators, which is now in the second edition, and the Celestial Frequency Oracle Cards and Healing Activators, which innovatively deliver a tangible, intuitive strengthening tool that blends high-frequency visionary art and divine light codes for self-transformation, self-illumination, and self-healing. You can check out her website at lightstarcreations.com. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, hoping that she got in by now, bringing topics of interest and hope to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we would like to thank Kathy and Fiona for hosting the switchboard tonight for anyone who may have a question or comment for Lightstar. Our main website is starseedhotline.com. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. Lavendar has now retired from doing sessions so she can finish her book and continue writing for starseeds. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you're going to get a window of 10 hours of great manifestational power. You can find out exactly when it happens to make the most of it by requesting your solar return timing. And if you would order that 1 or 2 weeks before your birthday, you can make sure that you get that information on time. And if you want a reading of that chart, order about 2 months before your birthday. So I'm going to switch screens here, and hopefully Anastasia will be there. And yes, okay, good. So I'd like to introduce Anastasia with her Starseed News.
Oh, that's just wonderful, Ariel. Thank you for the applause. And yes, I made it. It's unbelievable. But here I am, and I'm happy to be with you. What a time. Is Mercury retrograde by some chance? I should know that answer, but...
No, it's not.
It's just that technology is just... It's stalking me these days, I'm telling you. I don't know, but I've got the evil eye of the technology gods. They don't like me lately. Anyway, here I am, and I have some fun stuff for you tonight. So, we are the 28th of February, and tomorrow, everybody, is the first day of March. Most welcome in my household, just the idea of March. The daffodils are up. We made it through another winter. So far, so good anyway. And I wanted to share with you something that I used to do as a child. I haven't thought about it in years until I came across this news article. And that is to say rabbit, rabbit on the first of the month. And you say it for good luck. Of course, there's nobody out there that I can hear that will answer me directly. But I ask you, did you ever hear of that before, saying rabbit, rabbit when you first get out of bed?
I heard of that when I was in school.
Yes.
And now when I think about it, it's like, I'm not too aligned with rabbit medicine, so, I could just say something
Understood.
Else.
It clearly wasn't very important to me because I forgot about it, too. However, I'm going to share this tonight because it's appropriate, because tomorrow's the 1st of March, so anybody out there who wants to do this, try it. Rabbits are a common symbol of good luck, positivity, fertility, and growth in many cultures, not every culture, but in many cultures, from North America to Europe and Asia. Now, most prominent in spring, they are associated with renewal and rebirth after winter. And according to superstition, saying rabbit, rabbit before anything else on the first day of the month will bring you good luck for 30 days. Saying bunny, bunny is said to have the same effect. And if that works with technology, I might try that first thing in the morning. Bunny, bunny. Now, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt claimed to say rabbits on the first of each month. He was known to carry a lucky rabbit's foot during the 1932 presidential election ages ago, which he won by a landslide, becoming the first Democrat to win both the Electoral College and the popular vote in 80 years. Now, during World War II, many British fighter pilots opted for even greater luck by using the phrase. Notably, the Royal Air Force Academy successfully repelled the German Luftwaffe in both the Battle of Britain and the Blitz. So, rabbit, rabbit, everybody. Tomorrow's the first. Try your luck and see what happens. And this is a great story. There's an 11-year-old artist out there. And you really ought to look this up. If you're interested at all in modern art, if you have any interest in Picasso, most people don't. He's considered by, the average person. But you have to be an art connoisseur sometimes to appreciate Picasso. But there is a young man, 11 years old, a boy, who makes millions of dollars. And even though many artists in this world struggle to make ends meet, some in my own family, people often wait decades for their talent to be recognized or long after they've left this world. But that's not the case for this 11-year-old boy named Andres Valencia. Now, not to have his paintings, his paintings have earned him admiration in the art world, which is no small feat. And they also carry very hefty price tags. 11 years old, keep that in your uppermost mind. The pictures of him on the net, this is a little boy. But his work is tremendous. Recently, he's a prodigious painter. He just paints like crazy. He made a whopping $1.3 million selling his work at an Art Miami prestigious gallery in Florida, averaging around $150,000 per painting.
Wow.
This boy has bold, colorful canvases that have earned him the nickname Little Picasso. And the best way to describe his style, in his own words, as he told Today magazine, is a hint of cubism, surrealism a little. Well, I'll say. You got to check this out. His art journey began in the family dining room, where when he was 4 years old, he sat for hours looking at a painting in the dining room and sketching a copy of it. He said, I would bring paper and sit there and always try to copy, but it took years to get it right. Now, as his natural talent developed, he says he's never taken any art lessons, he began selling $20 watercolor paintings to family and friends, and soon some of those friends had acquired a wealth of his art, paying as much as $5,000 for one piece. Well, this 11-year-old has donated a significant portion of the money that he's made to nonprofits like the Children's Charity Box of Hope and AIDS Research Foundation. He said, "I've been painting a lot of my life," he told Forbes in the Miami Art Show. He said, "I like that people enjoy my art and it's fun going to different art shows." And his mom makes sure that fun is always a part of the picture for Andres, telling the New York Times, "My son is an artist, but he's a kid first." So, again, the boy's name, Andres, let me go back here, what was it? I should know that, shouldn't I? Valencia, Andres Valencia. Look that up on the Internet and check out this boy's Picasso-like art. It's pretty darn impressive. You would never guess a child painted it, never in a million years. It's really professional. And he's made so far at one art show $1.3 million, 11 years old.
Wow.
Now, speaking of art, let's move into something that some of us are interested in, and that's stamps. Any stamp collectors out there among the Starseed? Haven't done it for years. Used to love stamps. Had a nice collection. Well, Ukraine has issued a postage stamp with a reproduction of a rather well-known mural in Ukraine, mural, large painting on a brick wall. And the mural shows a picture of a young boy beating up a grown man in judo. You know, martial arts, judo. The kid is just beating up this man. And they made this stamp to commemorate the first anniversary of Russia's invasion. Now, it was painted by a British street artist on a demolished wall in one of the towns in Ukraine, unpronounceable. It's a town northwest of Kyiv. Anyway, it's a reference to David versus Goliath. It represents Vladimir Putin, known to be a black belt in judo, and depicts a young judoka representing Ukraine, knocking down a grown man. A little boy in a white judo outfit beating the heck out of a black belt. The phrase, and I wondered if this was suitable for Starseed, but I guess so I'm going to share it with you. The phrase, quote, in capital letters in Cyrillic script. Here it is. FCKPTN. And if you want to know what that stands for, just add the vowels, and you'll know. That has been added to the lower left part of the new stamp. Despite all of this issue with Ukraine and Russia and all the horrible things happening, I have to wonder, what's going on in the world that we put words like that on a stamp, even if the vowels are left out? But there it is. Residents of the capital city have flocked to buy these new stamps from Kyiv's main post office. So it's going to be a collector's item. If you collect stamps, you might want to get one of these. The little guy is beating up the big guy. You bet. You go, Ukraine. Absolutely. Now, onto a lighter, less, not particularly funny story, but this is touching. A business here in America that uses tomatoes in its manufacture of a product is looking for somebody called the ketchup boat guy. Well, let me tell you what this story is about. Last month, there was a miracle that actually happened in the Caribbean Sea. A man from Dominica who's named Elvis Francois was rescued after he was lost at sea for nearly a month. And what did he survive on for nearly a month? Ketchup. The 47-year-old guy had been working on his boat in St. Martin when the weather turned for the worst and he was blown out to sea and he couldn't get back to shore. He realized all he could do was wait it out and make the best of whatever he had on hand. He said, "I had no food, just a bottle of ketchup on the boat, some garlic powder," he told CBS. He said, "So I mixed some water so that I had this to survive for 24 days in the sea. 24 days, no land, nobody to talk to. I don't know what to do. I don't know where I was. It was rough. At a certain time," he said, "I lose hope, and I think about my family." Well, after hearing his surviving on ketchup story, Heinz Company has sensed that a fabulous bit of publicity was in the cards and is now looking for this man. Heinz wants to buy him a new boat, and it's been several days now, and Elvis Francois is nowhere to be seen. So Heinz has turned to social media. Heinz posted a message in a bottle on Instagram, the pun about the shipwreck and all that, pleading for help to find the so-called ketchup boat guy. They said, "We need your help in tracking down an amazing man with an amazing story." So Heinz wants to celebrate his safe return home and help him buy a new boat, but we can't seem to find him. In a statement to the media, a spokesman for Heinz said they want to gift Francois a new state-of-the-art boat that will be equipped with full navigational technology to avoid another disaster in the future. And as of a week after the original message asking the Internet for help, the search is still continuing. Heinz has posted two more messages since their first plea, one explaining that Francois could be in any of Dominica's 18 towns and 53 villages, and another message clarifying that they've reached out to the government of Dominica and the Colombian Navy, who rescued him. They say they've been met with several impersonators, people who say that they're Elvis Francois, but they haven't found him yet, but they're not giving up. The company asserts, we know he's still out there. So if you're listening to this, Elvis Francois, there's a new boat waiting for you from Heinz Ketchup. It kept you alive. It's good for the rest of us. Wow. Have you ever wondered how a zebra got its stripes? I think when I was a kid, I think I asked my mother that. And according to Rudyard Kipling, a controversial now 19th century writer, the zebra got its stripes by standing half in the shade and half out. And the reason he's black and white is because the slippery, slidey shadows of the trees fell on its body. It's according to Rudyard Kipling, who wrote The Jungle Book, by the way. Well, researchers at the University of Bristol don't agree with Mr. Kipling. They believe they have found out exactly why zebra fur is striped with its very crisp outlines. No other animal is quite like a zebra. The team has figured out that the zebra stripes have everything to do with reducing ectoparasite attack, more commonly known as pesky biting flies. Their findings have been published in the Journal of Experimental Biology, and that reveals that the zebra's stark black and white distinctions are very effective in thwarting horsefly attack. The research was led by the University of Bristol School of Biological Sciences, and the researchers explain, we knew that horseflies are averse to landing on striped objects. A number of studies have now shown this, but it's not clear which aspects of the stripes they find aversive. Is it the thinness of the stripes? How would y'all like to just have that to think about all day long, just try to figure this out? That's all the worry in the world. They go on to say, is it the contrast of the black and the white? Well, we decided to explore these issues using different pattern cloths that we draped over horses. And then they set up cameras and filmed incoming horseflies. The evidence was conclusive, according to researchers. The thin black and white stripes repelled the horseflies the best. And now the team is going to try to figure out why natural selection of nature chose zebras, but not other hooved animals. So there you go. We don't know exactly how they got their stripes yet, but we do know that that's why they have them. It keeps the horseflies off of them. So you can follow that logic however you wish, but that's the new finding. Now, you know, I think we're all concerned about water. Good grief. I know I am. Just about everybody is that's thinking about it. And, of course, there's a want of it. You know, there's drought and there's contamination and the poor people in Ohio. And goodness sakes, water is just becoming a concern over all the planet. And one of those concerns is forever chemicals, PFAs. PFAs are a class of compounds that have been widely used since the 1950s, but they've been linked to a number of concerning health issues. And to make matters worse, a recent study discovered that PFA levels in rainfall, there's practically everywhere on Earth, and even that rainwater is exceeding safety levels. Now, that's really concerning. Huh. You know, what is in our rainwater is in our rivers, is in the ocean, in the ponds. So that goes up in the sky and comes down as rainwater. So the contamination in groundwater and in land water is going up into the sky and recycling. So these molecules are very difficult to degrade, and that's how they got the term, the moniker, forever chemicals. Well, scientists based in Australia have devised an exciting new method for eliminating these from water. They found that when a solution is added to contaminated water, their solution to the problem is added to contaminated water, It covers the contaminants and renders them magnetic and allows them then to be extracted from the water. The method for removing these PFAs from water involves creating a magnetic solution that covers the molecules in these forever chemicals and magnetizes them. And experiments with small samples of contaminated water, the scientists discovered that they could remove over 95% of the PFA molecules within 30 seconds, including over 99% of something called Gen X, a particularly hazardous compound. Fascinating. Tremendous. I wish them the best. It's really very hopeful. The scientist said, our method shows that it's possible to remove more of these chemicals in a way that is faster, cheaper, cleaner, and is very simple because the process does not need electricity. It can be used in remote and off-grid communities, and now they're going to scale up the testing and have it commercially available within the next couple of years. Couldn't be soon enough, but that's tremendous breakthrough. Wonderful. Good news.
Yeah.
Well, tired of mowing your lawn? Some people at the University of California, Davis have a solution for you. If you're one of the lucky students to attend the University of California at Davis, you will have seen the solution. There are sheep mowers on campus, and they're managed by the College of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences. And if you haven't guessed it yet, it's domestic sheep. Sheep mowers. These have been on the campus since 2021. They did it because COVID masking and social distancing protocols altered campus life. And they needed to keep their lawns trimmed. They didn't want to use the mowers. I guess they didn't want people. I don't know. But that's what they say. The sheep have proved now to be a powerful mood booster also for students, staff, faculty, and advisors, visitors. In addition to grazing on the weeds and doing a very good job of keeping the grass short, they also enrich the environment by depositing organic fertilizer at regular intervals on the landscapes where they graze. Sheep mowers provide a lot of other environmental benefits. Now, we're talking about grazing sheep here, just to be clear. They reduce noise pollution. They decrease fossil fuel consumption. And a recent study shows that the benefits, most surprising and unexpected, is that they're improving the students' mental health and their well-being and is reducing student stress levels just by being there.
Wow.
The students that were interviewed reported being happy. They're stressed between classes. They have finals. They're freaking out. They go out. They sit down on a bench and watch the sheep. And before you know it, they're cured. They go on with their day with a whole new sense of purpose and calmness, and they're happy. Student after student after student reported that. They are loving these sheep. And there's quite a mess of them, quite a bunch of sheep that they are using to keep the lawns trimmed at the University of California, Davis. What do you think about that, Ariel? I think that's brilliant.
That's wonderful.
And guess what? No lawnmower noise. And
right.
The kids are really, the whole public is really enjoying this. And the sheep, of course, are very happy. All right, our last story for tonight is about a way to rescue people caught in rubble after earthquakes. And this is really something. After the terrible earthquake in Turkey and Syria last week, with many thousands of casualties, rescuers have been scrambling to discover survivors in the rubble of these buildings. Search and rescue dogs helped at some locations, but they say that future disasters may receive assistance from a very unexpected source. Rats are currently being trained to work in the aftermath of earthquakes. Rats can go deep into the rubble and penetrate where dogs may not be able to go. This is an electrical engineer that's working with a nonprofit company that trains the rats. Why do they need an electrical engineer? Well, I'll tell you. For more than a decade, the organization has used rats to identify landmines in Africa. They are relying on rats' amazing sense of smell. Now, this is where the electric engineer comes in. The rodents wear a backpack with tiny cameras that can broadcast a video feed to rescuers' phone outside as they practice for future crises. They are doing practice runs with these rats. Their backpack contains a two-way microphone. It allows the rescue team to communicate with victims. The rats also wear a vest with a microswitch. What the rats themselves are taught to pull when they find a person. Rescuers can transmit a beeping signal to the rats, instructing them to return to the surface. And again, they get their rewards, such as peanuts or maybe some bananas and avocados. And so far, these rats have mastered the ability to locate victims. They can and do activate a switch to communicate the position of the victim, and they navigate out of the wreckage on command. Now, they say their location abilities are becoming more complex with time. They're adding in their training additional obstacles and loud noises like you would have with cranes overhead removing stuff. The crew has intended to travel to Turkey to continue training, but they said they weren't prepared to work with the level of the present tragedy. According to this rat team, they say it's better to wait until they're certain that the team is completely prepared. They said, we don't want to get in the way, but hopefully we're going to have these rats ready for the next one. And these particular rats are enormous. We don't have those kinds of rats here in the States. My one question to myself as I read this was, wouldn't that freak out the people that are being rescued? I mean, a lot of people might really be startled and scared to see a rat, not knowing what it was for. But I suppose, since the rat is wired to a camera, the observers above can see when a rat is approaching a person and speak through the microphone so that the person hears someone talking to them. I imagine that would assuage the panic. Someone might see it, a big rat coming at them in a hole under the ground. So, but that's really something, and it really makes a lot of sense. And finally, real quick, we have one last story to share with you briefly. I think it's important in the field of medicine. It also raises certain issues. But let me just say that Australia is the first nation to acknowledge psychedelics as medicine. Now, the word about the mushroom treatment in mental health has been all over the mainstream news in the last week. But this is something a bit different. Let me tell you, the Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration, that's what they call kind of their health group, has surprised researchers by approving the psychedelic chemicals found in magic mushrooms and MDMA for use by patients with specific mental health issues, making Australia the first country to recognize psychedelics as medicines. So what's happening here in the States is not happening in a vacuum. This is occurring in other places as well. Interesting. Now, MDMA and psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, will be classified as Schedule 8 drugs, which means they will be available for controlled use when prescribed by a psychiatrist specifically, beginning in July of this year. Now, patients with specific treatment-resistant mental illnesses will have access to these medications. They're going to use it to probably treat post-traumatic stress disorder, treatment-resistant depression, and for all other purposes, they will remain illegal. They have found, incidentally, as an aside, that psychedelic substances or other consciousness-altering drugs or plants are not advisable for individuals that have a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, schizophrenia, or psychoses, and other certain conditions where the ego is not fully developed. So that is the wrong thing to do, a terribly wrong thing to prescribe in many mental conditions. There are only a few that allow this to be of safe use. So that is in the wind and in the future. All right, well, Australia, you know, so many other countries are ahead of us. Have you noticed that, Ariel? Both with the environment, with medicine, I mean, wow. And it's good to know, you know, the world often does better than we do here in the States. I mean, it's not just about us. We are part of a big planet and many beautiful people doing many wonderful things to solve our collective issues. Blessings to each and every one of them. We have a wonderful planet, and we're part of a wonderful species, a little bit lost at the moment, but, you know, that's just part of the journey. So I know all of you Starseed are here to make it better, and I love you so much for that. I love each one of you. You're such beautiful hearts. That's a treasure, truly. From my heart to each one of you, I love you. Have a beautiful March, and don't forget, rabbit tomorrow if you want to improve your luck. And I'll try that before next show, next 2 weeks, make sure we don't have any technological difficulties. Okay. Thank you so much, Ariel. Have a great night.
Thank you, Anastasia. Good job.
Bye-bye.
See you in 2 weeks. Okay. So now I'm going to get Lavendar's mic open and our special guest, Lightstar, get your mic open. It's spinning. Okay. Ladies, your mics are open. Lavendar, you set and go? Ready to go?
I'm set and ready.
Okay.
So Lightstar, I remember you. I did your chart, your starseed chart back in, I think, 2013. So I came in here and I pulled up your chart just to see what was happening tonight. So guess what you have? You have Jupiter and Venus conjunct on your Athena as we're talking.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I know it's been so long. Gosh, was that all the way back 2013? Wow.
Yes, it was.
A lot has happened since then, that's for sure.
And I'm so thrilled to see these cards that you have created and the artwork. I've been sitting and looking at the pictures and just marveling at the galactic instructions on each one of them. So I applaud you, girl. This is a great venture that you're doing.
Yeah,
so tell us a little about what's happening with you and how you came to do these cards and the work that you do for Starseeds. Just start at the beginning and tell us anything you want us to know.
Okay. Well, thank you again for having me on here. I've gotten to do so many different types of things over the years, but I also... I'm an artist, visionary artist, and I call my art attunement art. So that's a little unusual about my artwork. It's just comes and it's more activating and awakening for people. So I have a whole repertoire of artwork that I've been working on that has turned into the Oracle cards. And then I also help people in my work just to help them to know who they are, and I do starseed origins, soul origins from the perspectives of starseed, angelic, and elemental streams and aspects, and help people with life purpose, and I have a whole host of different things, but I also do custom artwork for people, and I have a unique way of looking at some of the codes and symbols and glyphs and light languages that are coming in around people's energy, and I can tap into that and draw that and actually create an art image for them that helps them to unpack their, codes that are coming in or the energy packets. And so these are just some of the things that I do, but over the years, I've also dived in, opened up my stream to music. And that wasn't something I was ever doing in my past, but some levels had opened up for me, channels opened up, and so I've been doing music now, some different types of music that we can talk about that later as well. But really just all of my artwork started to formulate into an oracle concept early on, and yet it still takes 5 years for me to create at least one of the decks. It took me 5 years, and then it was probably another 5 years before I created the second one, because this is all my own artwork, so it takes me a long time to get to that many to create an art image, and then to create 44 or now 55 in the other deck. So the first deck that I had was out for 5 years, and it's the Magical Dimensions Oracle cards, and that has now been in second edition. So now we just came out with the second edition of that, where I've added 11 new cards and refaced the borders and some of the backing, because it actually blends in and matches now with my second Oracle deck, which is the Celestial Frequencies Oracle. So you could think of them as like the first deck is the starter deck. It's got all the different, a lot of elemental energies, a lot of earth energies, Gaia energies, but also some galactics and angelics. It's just kind of a well-rounded, got unicorns in there and all different kinds of energies in there. And then the Celestial Frequencies Oracle is like an upgrade to the first deck, and you can blend them all together to get a full 99 cards out of both decks with the 55 new second edition of the Magical Dimensions. And so it gives you this upgrade. The Celestial Frequencies deck has 12 different galactic images in there. So they're the star people. And they also have a lot of codes and symbols and glyphs and light languages in it as well with those cards. So that's why it also is a kind of an upgrade and an activation in and of itself. Because over the decade or so, I've been also doing light language activations for people, and I speak about over 20. I'd say that I have about 125 in my energy field, but I can't pull all that down. So I've gotten about 20 or so that I'm working with on a regular type of basis. Maybe half of those I'm working with it mostly, but there's other ones that I speak that comes out sometimes just, you know, for whatever purpose. And I do a lot of activations on my YouTube channel for people as well on there. So that's kind of the overview of the decks and how they came to be. I'm really excited about them. It's kind of interesting. Something happened where this is what really was supposed to come out. The second deck was supposed to come out in the summer of 2022. And that's when it was set to come out, and the Magical Dimensions second edition wasn't supposed to come out until later, like after that. So I think that what happened, personally, I feel that the Star Friends, my team upstairs, delayed everything because there was a massive delay. The supply chain issues with publishers were having problems, paper shortages, like publishing issues, you name it, everything halted. And that deck was put off, and it delayed a long time until it came out exactly when the second edition of my Magical Dimensions was coming out. So it's like it caught up to itself, and that was something I didn't plan, but that I think the universe planned because they wanted them to come out together. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, we say that saying, God, you know, what is it? God plan or man plans and God laughs, you know, like, oh, okay, you're not doing that. Sorry. So I just kind of let it up to, you know, the universe to how that happened, but that's how it played out. And now that they are finally shipping, because I had a lot of delay with a lot of the pre-orders, and those just finally just got out the door. And now the products are shipping regularly. If you get them from my website or from my Etsy site, they are shipping out. I just have heard a lot of things about some other people online not getting them, and that's maybe because that bookseller doesn't have them yet from my publisher, but they are shipping out in a couple of business days from my site. And so that's kind of the overview. I'm really excited about them. I created these for the world, really, to activate and awaken and upgrade and open to these other realms. And that's kind of what I'm doing, is bringing these other realms here so that we can have
right.
a more well-rounded experience.
Well, I really think that these cards are designed for people that have enough soul maturity to know what they're looking at.
Yeah,
okay?
the second one are going to be, like I said, it's a little bit of an intermediate type of work. But that's why I also have a book that comes with the cards. And that will have a lot of the information on it, so the people that don't know what, you know, the star race means or whatnot, they can just go and read about it, and that will help a lot.
I do have a request. The next time you do another edition and want to add
mm-hmm.
something, I would love to see a card for walk-ins.
Ah, yes, walk-ins.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That is
yes,
a good one.
Because I am really starting to see a lot of walk-ins show up on the planet. We used to have thousands, and now we have millions, especially after the virus that hit us and took a lot of people out. They brought a lot of walk-ins to the planet. So I'm just requesting, next time
you do
the card, please
yeah,
walk-in.
If I do another one, because it'll probably be another 5 years before they want me to do another edition, you know, something different. But by that point, or it might be in a second, you know, a third deck, because by that point.
Five years from now, everybody's going to know what a walk-in is.
Right, exactly. That's a good point, though. There's a lot of different, no, that's a great point, and I will definitely jot that down because there are so many new concepts, new things that are coming onto the scene that I think will be helpful to have in an upgrade. So thank you for that suggestion.
So tell us a little bit about your early history of how you became the artist and the goddess that you are. Were you raised in a family that supported you, or were you raised by religious people? Or tell us a little bit about how you came up to know who you are.
Yeah, that's a great question. I had my parents are not here on the planet any longer, and I had a series of starting in 2012, actually. That's when my father left the planet in 2012. And then after that, it's like my mom left 4 years later, and then now all my aunts and all my uncles and everybody is all gone, like all the elders. It's like within a five-year period, 4 years, every 4 years, everyone just kind of was leaving the planet. So it's kind of interesting. But they were awesome people, though. My parents were, raised very open-minded to an extent. We were raised Jewish, actually, religiously, but we also had an experience after my parents actually divorced that my mom got really into the Christian religion and she started going to, you know, churches, and I was sort of dragged along with her. So I had to, I had some experiences there, and she even went to like see a guru, and, you know, she got into a lot of different things, and I just was along for the ride. So I got to experience or be exposed to some of these open-minded type things. My father was actually a lot more interested in the Eastern traditions or Eastern religions. And so he was exposed to a lot of that. And that also, he told us a lot about what he was experiencing. You know, he did the thing where he went into a closet and you don't eat, or you just sit there and think about, you know, it's kind of like the monks or whatnot, but it's just a part of a training. And so they had a lot of different experiences. They were very open-minded in that. So I feel like I got exposure to a lot of different types of religions in a way when I was younger. And I really didn't gravitate much to religion. So, and to be honest, I was not doing any artwork as a kid. This was not something I was doing very young. I would say I was one of those people that literally got activated later on in life, and I had no art training.
How old were you when you got activated? What was your age when you started artwork?
Well, that happened when I was in my, I guess I would say early, might have been my late 20s, early 30s, because how it happened was, well, how it initially happened, I'd say, I had a slip and fall accident, and I broke my leg and had surgery, and I was non-weight-bearing in a cast for 3 months, and I had to be transported back to California at the time with my dad and my stepmom's house. And in that time, I couldn't walk for 3 months, so I had nothing to do. My dad just, you know, handed me some charcoal and some colored pencils, and he's just like, here, and go. And I'm like, I have no idea what to do here. I've never done this, but I literally was like reading and doing that because there was nothing I could do for 3 months. So I started doing drawing and had no training or anything, but I was like, wow, I guess I could kind of do this. But what happened was I did all these drawings, and then I literally put it away. After I went back to work, I put it away. I didn't do any more of that. I didn't, you know, hand drawings or not any of that. But the digital art started to come back when I was in work in Colorado, and I was working for a company there. I was actually working for a restoration company, environmental construction, nothing to do with spirituality, but I actually was doing digital art, and I was kind of getting into web design and some aspects there, just kind of diving in and doing some graphic design. And so that's really how it started as far as the skill set came in there, because I started to find I had aptitude for more of the digital arts, but again, didn't pick up anything like hand drawing at all. So as I morphed into doing that work for the environmental company and a construction company, it wasn't until I did that all those years, you know, of the art, but it was, you know, business art. And then it wasn't until I moved to Sedona, and that was a decade ago, over a decade, I think it was like 13 years ago. And that was the time when I was like, okay, I need to do something different. I knew it. 2009 is when the market was crashing. I had a feeling the job was going to be taken away, and I was getting, my guidance was telling me you need to go. You need to do your thing elsewhere. And so I left Colorado at the time. I'd been there for 15 years and was on just a journey of like trying to find what the heck I was going to do next and had no idea. But I ended up in Sedona, not really on purpose. That just sort of happened. And when I ended up in Sedona, I thought I would only stay there for 6 months. And now I've been here 13 years. So life has a different way of taking you on a path. But everything of all of my intuitive guidance, my you know, working in the intuitive field, my artwork, and everything I'm doing with my spiritual art started to come out here in Sedona. It was like I had the skill set, but I had never done anything like what you're seeing my art now. And so it started off as a process, and I just started to unfold and seeing these other worlds and opening up my intuitive vision to these other worlds, and then started to create them in a concept in a way that I could and refine that over periods of time. And so that's kind of how this all unfolded and how I became doing what I'm doing. And it's certainly people like you, Lavendar, that helped me to understand in a way, or understand, we're trying to say understand now instead of understand, changing the vocabulary here. But you really helped me too in the beginning, because it was like all about, like, you saw things in that I was going to be doing that I wasn't doing yet. And so some of those channels of opening up, and I can give you an example. I remember you even said one thing about the music, and I was at the time, I wasn't even doing any music. I've never had music in my repertoire. I never even done any of it. And so that actually took a while, but it just opened up a few years ago. So thank you for giving me some insight into myself, you know, truly. And then I've just sort of taken the ball and just started running with it, you know. I mean, I feel like I'm not a walk-in, but I feel like a walk-in, because my life just changed so dramatically.
There's a lot of definitions of walk-ins. There's right. So many different types of walk-ins. Lately, I say lately, in the last few years, I call them drop-bys because they don't stay very long. They're not walk-ins, they're just drop-bys. Okay?
Drop-bys.
I'm looking at your chart, and you were born with planets in Aquarius in your fifth house, which shows Atlantean genius.
Okay? That's awesome.
And today, Mercury is at 26 Aquarius, the mark of Atlantis, today.
Interesting. I know time period
your
six in Atlantis.
Your sixth house
well.
is also Atlantean degree. So you're really, when I looked at your cards and you have several things in here called the Atlantean Library, I went,
yes.
Oh, of course.
Oh, it was, that, yeah, if you strung like three of those or a couple of those cards together, it creates my panoramic image of the Atlantean libraries.
Yes, and that's exactly. And
it's
see,
really
you
powerful.
Were born, you were
really
born with it. This was at your birth.
Yeah,
this
that makes sense. That totally makes sense, because you know, I had dreams as a kid. Like, I literally had dreams as a kid of that. Like, that image of the Atlantean libraries is an actual real thing. Like, I was seeing it, these underwater aqua gates, these different portals, these all different beings from all over, even galactic ET races, like all of it. And yet it was you know, focused on the sea at the time that I was seeing the visions of that. And, you know, it took a while to actually get your vision into, like, tangible form. That took a while. But
I don't know whether I don't know whether I told you this at your reading or not, but I was told some time ago that the Galactics will send a beam of inspiration or a plan to 1,000 people, 100 run with it, and 10 pick it up. No, 100 pick it up, 10 run with it, but only one gets to do it. And I think you were in that, because when you were born with such a strong Atlantean library that, and now you've come forward with these beautiful cards and images that could only come from a place like Atlantis.
You know, it's funny you said that, because I call that whole process that you just said, which I also call the Pleiadians, actually have a lot to do with this, I feel, is the creativity matrix. The creativity matrix is like that. It's like this river of idea that flows, and we reach up, and there's a certain amount that comes to several people, and then and those several people get a chance to dilute and run with it, and then not everybody gets to run with it. I found this myself, if you sit on something and you don't do it and you don't get the calling to go in and actually do it, somebody else will, though, reach up into that matrix, pull it down, and you'll see it. If you didn't do it, you'll find somebody will, like, come around you, and you'll see your, oh, wow, I was supposed to do that, but I didn't. Okay, good for the other person, though.
So let me ask you, in your 20s and 30s and 40s, when you're watching television and an invention came up, did you ever say, oh, I thought of that already? Did you do that?
I have done that, where it's like, but, you know, not that you picked, took it and ran with it, you know? I think that sometimes I feel like they, when we look at the Galactics and they give, you know, wherever it comes from, but if you pull it down, sometimes they feel like saying to those people, you know, we have a lot of other things going on down here. I can't always get to everything. Like, I can't, you know, it's not like I have time to do all of these things, right? So I've kind of had to just pick the most important things that you just are, get the calling and you're getting the idea and you're being asked, do you want to run with this? You have to kind of pick which ones are in the reality of your, you know, getting it together and making it happen. Because I know that a lot of those things, inventions and all sorts of things that you want to do, they don't all come to pass. Now, I mean, I've spent the last decade, especially the last 5 years too, just pushing a lot of things out the door, a lot of new things. And so I did do a lot of what was asked of me, you know, to the detriment of, you know, my life, you know, really, because it was really dedicated to bringing what I can to humanity. That's what was important to me about waking up and doing it. You know, it wasn't until I was in my 40s. You know, some people wake up and start doing this stuff much earlier. I wish I had, but, you know, I know there's reasons why I couldn't have done it at that time. But still, I feel like I had a lot of work to do in a very short window. So it's like, go again.
Yeah, but... And also, astrologically, you've got Neptune conjunct your Saturn now at the Jesus and Mary Magdalene degree on the planet. So you're going to come into a lot of people that are holding the Jesus, Mary Magdalene bloodline on the planet, which there are millions of them, by the way.
Yes. I've already had that happen, where I've come across that connection point through – I was connected to that very – very strongly as well through that book that you always recommend, that the Expected One. And that book was very eye-opening for, I'm sure, a lot of people who I was tears streaming down my teeth, just such a visceral feeling, you know, that this is truth here. And I think a lot of us were in that time period, you know, more than we know. that we were there and we experienced that. And so I have felt like I've, you know, there's a lot of people coming around now that are connected to the divine feminine energy as well as the divine masculine and balancing that. So that makes total sense as well.
What years did you live in Colorado? Because I was in Colorado from 1980 to 1987.
80 to 87. Okay, so I was there, it would have been, I graduated college in 89. So I think it would have been for me, actually I was there about the year 1999. That's when I had my accident. So I know I was there then. Through, you know, for the next like 15 years after that.
Okay, right.
Somewhere around that.
I think everyone should have some time in Colorado. It helps to clear your mind.
I loved it when I was there. I really loved it when I was there. I mean, it was bipolar weather, yes, for sure. That part of it I really wasn't crazy about. But the beauty of the mountains there and the mountain range and the energy there, it felt so alive. There was so much life and aliveness. I just love that area there. Sedona's got its own vibe. To me, it's not the same, but it's still got its own unique signature. And I've been really grateful to have lived in some of the most beautiful places in the United States, you know, because I lived in Santa Barbara, I lived in Santa Cruz, in the Bay Area, and also down in Southern California, San Diego area. So I've lived quite a bit, and now Arizona, lived some of the most beautiful places. And yes, I definitely think Colorado is an experience, if you don't mind the blizzards and the cold and the crazy weather.
Well, here in Arkansas, we've had pretty mild winter, and we've had 70-degree weather for the last few days when everybody else is really cold. So we're very fortunate to have good weather here in Arkansas.
Arkansas is beautiful. It's just you got a lot of the green and... Are you up by the Eureka Springs area, or do you, you get up there.
We're around the Hot Springs area.
Yeah, that's a nice area.
Yeah.
So do you still take your tours and stuff to Arkansas? Okay, that's great.
Yes, you need to come to one at some point in time. We do one in May and November now. We have dropped the March and the August ones, but we're doing the Pleiadian lineup in May and in November. So
oh,
May
wonderful.
Is full. Maybe you could come in November. Who knows?
I will definitely put it on my to-do list at some point.
Okay.
If I can get away for doing that, that would be nice.
Yeah.
I've been so locked in.
I so appreciate that you sent me both of these decks. You also sent both decks to my co-host, Arielle, who I'd like to pass you over to now. She has the switchboard, and I'm sure she has some questions for you because she's pretty excited about these cards, let me tell you.
Yeah, thank you. thank you for just being the first people to have your hands on them and to play with them. And, you know, they have the gold and silver frequencies on the back now, which is something new to add. There's a nice little foiling effect on there. So they're very, very high quality, and I'm very excited. So I'm glad you guys have them.
And the back cover has all these symbols of Athena on the back. The diamonds are all over the back.
Yes, diamond. The diamond frequency came in a lot with this deck. There's a lot of diamond energy coming in. So, and it's kind of got, you know, the cover of it is, depicts Ascended Master Hilarion. That's my depiction of him. And so it kind of balances it out with the masculine and feminine because the first deck has the female energy on the front. And then now this has the celestial frequency. It's got the masculine energy. And there's a little bit more of the masculine cards in there as well. So that balances out. And that's why I like it. Both masculine and feminine energies intertwining together.
Yes. Yes, it's beautiful. Both decks are beautiful, and I would say to my Starseed audience, please take a look at these cards and see if they speak to you, because they definitely have messages from the Atlantean Library. So I'd like to pass you over now to Arielle, my co-host.
Thanks so much, Lavender. It was great to talk with you.
You too, honey. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So I wanted to go a little bit into a little bit in more specifics with the mm-hmm. cards, because I have just so enjoyed them. And mm-hmm. I know that, you know, the magical dimensions you said are more, you know, for people who maybe are, you know, beginners or just starting out, or mm-hmm. maybe they're advanced souls, but they are not familiar with oracle cards. And, you know, you've got several different layouts to use, you know, really mm-hmm. clear, you know, instructions in the book. And I pulled out a couple of cards here just to tell you how much, you know, I like them. And mm-hmm. When the very first time I got the Magical Dimensions deck, mm-hmm. the very first thing I did, of course, I followed the directions and cleansed my hands and did the, you know, energy clearing on the deck. And mm-hmm. and then I just pulled out three cards, mm-hmm. You know, kind of at random. And one of them was Love, you know, Pleiades, Star Angel.
Mm, and I love that card. Perfect.
Even without looking it up to see what your definition is, mm-hmm. You know, I could just look at this for a long time and just keep, you know, absorbing. And they're so, I mean, these cards are so coded that even if you yeah. don't know that they're coded, there's a part of you that does know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you
absolutely.
Understand what, yeah, I mean, it kind of goes on a like a subliminal kind of level and starts mm-hmm. to shake things loose. And I'm looking for the other card that I'm trying to remember.
Remember which one?
which ones they were, but there was the, oh, Adventure. And
ah, yes. Adventure.
Yeah, and I was like, well, yeah, I really resonated with that. And there was another one.
So you mix the cards together. Or the two decks together and just pick from those, right? Or were you just picking?
No, actually, I did them one at a time.
Oh, you did?
Because
okay,
I kind of wanted to, you know, get the pure flavor from
yeah.
each deck. and they really yeah. do have, you know, different frequencies. But I found mm-hmm. that I was just holding the deck and just being still. And, mm-hmm. and, the question that I had is, what is of top priority right now?
Mm.
So, and I pulled out three cards, and I've mm-hmm. just from, you know, other decks that I've used, one, you know, the first one would be like what you've come through, and then where you are now, and then where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And there was... I'm looking through. I wish I hadn't mixed them back into the deck because
yeah.
I was like, what
I
was
think that's
that
kind
card?
Of, the one, I think the reading that most symbolizes if you pick three cards is probably going to be the Keys of the Bridge, because there's three cards there. And that is kind of like the first one's the present, the second one's the lesson, and the third one is like the future or, you know, possible insights into that. So it could be similar reading to the Keys of the Bridge. But definitely I love the fact that when those come out, because of two, the Pleiades and the Adventure card, you know, those are actually really playful cards. You know, it's also about discovery, self-discovery, and, you know, going down the rabbit hole, so to
right.
speak.
Yeah.
You know,
as I'm
opening
looking
up.
The third one had to do with healing. And I know you've probably got several cards in here that have to do with that. But mm-hmm. rather than sit here and shuffle through cards, I just
yeah.
you know, and I really like the ones where you have the actual frequencies, you know, like unification, 963
mm-hmm.
hertz, the
yes,
oneness healing code.
That's a very unique thing to my work, because they're called healing. Well, they're in the first deck, the second I should say the second edition, Magical Dimensions, have 7 chakra cards in there. So they're like cards that are related to the chakras. Most people are familiar. They're just the main 7. And then in my Celestial Frequencies, the new one, I had done 7 healing shields and 7 healing codes. And so the healing codes themselves are relating to Solveggio frequencies. So when you see, 417 hertz, cleansing healing code, for example, that's depicting energy. So it's like, and these do relate to the 7 chakras also, but in this way, it's actually looking as though it's kind of like a higher octave of your chakra systems in a way, higher frequencies, higher, because you're getting the codes and the symbols in there as well as the main frequency of the Solfeggio tone you're working with the codes. And then the shields, they more resonate to the realms. I call it realms rather than chakras per se. The shields are like shields, literally. So, and they follow the like astral realm to the galactic realm, to the physical realm, or, psychic realm and things of that nature. So they're really powerful because those are mixed in, but there's basically 14 of them in there in the Celestial Frequencies. And I love those. They're very powerful, and they help you to, and once you get to know their frequencies and get to feel their energies, you can help answer a lot of questions that way too, because like, what is this energy? What does the frequency have to do with? Well, it might have to do if you pull the psychic healing shield, for instance, you're dealing with some mental or psychic or intuition. And it could also be, you could read those in the reverse, even though I don't have reversals on cards. I don't create them, but if people like to mix them up and, create their own reversals and their own meanings of those, I encourage people to do that. I don't, I have a certain system that I created for this, but I don't want to limit people. So I want people, the Oracle decks are supposed to be, I created the deck booklets because I felt, I had to. You have to give people something to start with, but I actually prefer if people just take the cards and just go with it and do it however it feels right to you, because that's you using your own intuition and building that psychic muscle, which is the whole reason why I created these two, is to help people to build that muscle. So don't be afraid to just go with it and just turn them upside down if you want, read them that way. I mean, I wrote a little bit about that in the second book, about reversals. But you can work with these many different ways. Even reading the numbers on them, in numerology, because there was some thought process in that to look at the certain numbers of the cards. And in the new deck, they also have an icon on the right-hand side at the bottom, which the first deck doesn't have that, but the second deck does. And it helps you just to know whether it's a shield, whether it's a code, whether it's a galactic being, or whether it's like another, I call it Metatron's energy, or, of the other galactics or other ascended masters or unicorns or whatnot like that. So other realms, other worldly realms of the orbs and things of that nature too. So they're fun to play with, that's for sure, but they're also very high level.
It seems to me that you've included some like fluidic energies to where, once a person, gets the hang of it and gets the flavor of each card, mm-hmm. You can take it as far as you want. I mean, just
absolutely.
Like, you put the ingredients on the counter and 5 mm-hmm. different people will cook 5 different meals. So it's,
exactly.
The ingredients are all there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was, reading your interpretation, I was putting my own spin on it. It's like, okay,
yes.
That I relate to that in this way, or someone else
absolutely.
Might relate to it in another way. So
yeah,
that's
exactly what I want, is that, you know, we have guidelines here, or guiding or starting point, you know, it's like the lighthouse. And then, yeah, if you were to take it however you would like to take it, the second deck actually has some realignments in the booklet that actually are helpful for working with some other types of healing embrace, healing expressions maybe for that particular card. So like in the first deck, I have some essential oils and a crystal listed. But then in the second deck, I sort of expanded that to where a lot of different types of, whether it works with, you know, flower essences, essential oils and crystals, but also some other types of healing modalities that might be also connected to that. Because some people are using these cards not just for oracle readings, which is the thing about my decks, is that they're also using them for grids. And I call them activator grids or activator healing grids. And I have some layouts in the books that can show you how to lay out the cards and how to use them for grid work, which is super powerful. I know some people that don't use them oracle decks. They don't use them for oracle, but they do use them for gridding. So that's another really unique thing about these, is that they're very versatile. They can be used
right.
in many different ways. And I even though I have suggested some few of the layouts for the grid work, you can come up with your own grids, your own layouts, you know, your own types of healing grids. But the ones that I have in here are just ones that I felt that those came very easily to putting the decks, you know, together. But you can, when you're using them as your oracle readings, I also have some really unique spreads. I don't do like the Celtic cross and the ones that you're usually used to hearing about. I'm, you know, coming up with different types of these spreads for oracle readings, like, you know, pyramid builder spread and cosmic ladder and the timeline sequencing spread is really interesting. So there's some really interesting ones in there that you can play around with, but by all means, I also like to have people just create their own stuff and go with it. But they're really for the world, for people who resonate with them, obviously, you know, people that want to start off, and you can use the decks separately. Do not have to mix them together. I just happen to do that because I like that. I like the silver and gold energies on the back, and I like how it just creates a really more powerful reading with both of them. But you can certainly use them by themselves, too. They're standalone decks as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I really, the first time I, used the Magical Dimensions cards, I felt uplifted, encouraged, I felt lighter, and because the way the cards that came up for the question that I asked, it was just so, I don't know, soothing, comforting, reassuring, you know, and I felt more hopeful, you know, encouraged about things, because I met a lot of people, you can get so easily sucked into the third dimensional collective,
yeah.
You know, the thought stream. The thought stream is like a cloud of pollution all
yes.
over the planet. And, you know,
yes.
not until you get up above, you know, a certain elevation can you kind of get up out of that, or if you're like on an airplane. But it's pretty insidious, because you could be, you know, standing in a soup of really dense energies, and it gets on you. And,
yep.
and, you know, you just kind of start feeling a little wonky or a little testy about things, and you realize that, you know, I've long called this energy cooties.
So,
you know, and you can, you know, when you go out in the third dimension,
yeah.
you can get that. So, and I felt that lift when I was working.
You know, that's so great to hear, because I know for myself that, you know, I'm a very sensitive soul, just like the next person out there, right? With all of us, you know, sensitives out there. And I tend to wall myself off from people quite a bit on this planet because due to the nature of what I'm doing is mostly on the computer and not with people as much, you know, in person anyway, but which I prefer. I literally do prefer that. But it doesn't mean I don't go out and I'm, you know, with people and stuff, but you're right. You really have, it's like a lot more that you got to do to your energy before and after, you know, being
right.
in
right.
the people. You have to come back and almost shower off, you know, energetically as well as physically some of the energy pollution, as you say, that is on us all the time. And so I'm always trying to help people to, you know, stay in the higher vibrations as much as you possibly can by whatever means necessary. It doesn't mean that you're not going to experience some of that pollution and some of that negative energies that are around, because we all do, especially those of us that are empaths that tend to pick up and absorb that stuff from other people. The more you practice working with, like, for instance, my shields. You know, it's one of the reasons why I created those shields was to actually help people with some of that external stuff and to keep your vibration high and to raise it up higher when you need to. It's like, you know, turn up the volume of your own higher self and your own octaves so that that stuff doesn't affect us as much. But, you know, that a lot of my energies that I put into the artwork, it's not just me, but it's also the higher galactics, the angelics, the elementals. They're all putting their energy in there too for everybody to work with their team, work with their own team, mm-hmm. and raise their frequencies. So I hear that a lot, though, just about the nature of, I just feel better with these decks in my hands. There's an energy about them. You know, they feel lighter or I feel lighter. It's really a common thing because you're not only just dealing with a picture, you know, on a piece of paper, you're actually dealing with the energetics behind that and everything uh-huh. that is involved in that, not just my work, but what they are, you know, I'd say infusing into the art for people on a higher level. And I don't have a lot of negative cards in the first place. I mean, there's a couple of challenge cards or something, but I'm not one to create a bunch of like the duality zone cards. I only have a few of them in there.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like we have enough of that. Like it's like, I don't know. It's just, I think we have a lot of that already. And so to counterbalance it, you know, some of the deeper meanings that I do have in there, but they're not going to be the real strong, like duality. Although I did mm-hmm. add in some of them to the second edition, like duality, there's a card in there called
right.
that, but well, that was needed. You know, there's things that were missing
well, yeah.
in there, and so
yeah.
I need to put that
in. If you can't recognize the duality, you can't transcend it.
Yeah, exactly.
And let me ask if you think by maintaining, you know, this higher, lighter frequency, the more that you can, you know, own that, wear that, then would you say that going, you know, into a really dense situation where the energies are really low, that it's less tolerable and you won't put up with that?
I think that, you know, as we embrace ourselves, who we really are, and as we get stronger in raising the frequency and being able to hold that energy, I think that by doing that, you know, this is the more we strengthen it. If we walk into a room that's just filled with all this negative low vibration, due to the nature that if you're holding your energy higher and you're in that vibration, you then transmute the whole room. So I feel
yeah.
like it actually becomes better, you become stronger, and the room and everyone in it becomes raised up as well. And that's what I think is the true, you know, that's like the mastery of it, where
uh-huh.
it shouldn't get harder for us. It should actually get, I don't say easier, but it should just have a higher purpose. That's the best way of putting it, that you turn your energy into a beacon of light that can't be doused. that can't be shut down, that can't be turned off. So it is like the lighthouse that walks into a room and no one has a key to turn off that light except you. So
right.
You can either dampen it, lessen it, lower it, dim your light, or you can just shine like a beacon. And what that's going to do to the rest of the room, well, you know, you can only see that the people that are going to be like blinded by it and be like, I can't look at that. I can't do that. I can't, you know, because we know that,
yeah.
Right? There's a lot of people that just don't like people's light. And those are the people that will, it's like they'll shrink away from it. But then the people that will, you know, see the light, and they probably will turn their own lighthouse on too, because it just, it stimulates everybody else. And that's what I think is really about. This is what we're doing here. So it is about building your strength, you know, to be able to walk into places that are really dense, especially those people that live in the dense environments. I mean, people that live
right.
in, you know, downtown Detroit, Michigan, or someplace that's got like downtown LA, you know, there's a lot of people holding the energy there. And I want to applaud all of you, by the way, who are doing that, because that is a really, really powerful job in a way that you're doing, holding down the grid there for other people. And so that's part of a lot of people's mission too. Not everybody has that mission, but there's a lot of people that do have that mission, and thank God for them.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And I think that the more practice you become at keeping that high frequency, the easier it is to maintain and not be affected when you go into, you know, go into the pit.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
As you were talking, I was seeing a visual that it really fit. If you imagine a piece of like nylon stocking type material, and it's in a frame, stretched in a frame. Well, if you take a pencil underneath it and push it up, there's one peak, but everything else around it gets lifted up just because that one peak is there. So it's like picking up the fabric of space, and so if you're the pencil, then when you go up under that fabric, everyone in your vicinity also gets elevated just by the light you're carrying.
The reverse is
true too. If there's a person who's pushing down on the fabric, they suck everybody in around them into that lower frequency. So,
yeah, and we've all experienced that, you know, at one point or another, when you've gone into a room or you've been around the people, and you know what it's like, and you walk in there. But I think the trick too is our intuitive abilities to be able to know and be aware. And that's what awareness is all about. You know, our consciousness has to be aware all the time of what's around us and in our surroundings. That's part of the awakening process of all starseeds, of all light workers, of everybody that, you know, when we go through that awakening process, we become more aware of our own energy. And we become more aware of our energy when we're feeling sad, or we're feeling angry, or we're feeling frustrated. And what that does in the vicinity of other sensitive people. And so we learn to moderate our different emotions and our different energies. I always say it's like, you know, Spock from Star Trek. You know, he's operating from a very high level, even though people say, oh, Spock doesn't have any emotions at all. Well, yes, he does. He's part human, if you remember. He's part human and part Vulcan. But so he does have the emotion, but he's able to take his Vulcan side and raise up his emotions so that they come from what I call the higher heart. Okay, so he's operating from a whole different place, which means his emotions are not tainted like roller coaster ride like most of us are. Like that his is more of a higher heart level. And so you're coming from that place, but you're staying in a higher level with it and not letting your emotions take over. And that's what I think is important for us to know, is we are supposed to be in management, control, whatever you want to call it, of your own emotions, your own energy field. You know, this is what the ancients teach. This is what the ancient Chinese masters teach that. I mean, you have to be aware of your own energy field first, and then being aware of other people's energy field and where your energy field stops and theirs starts, and then be able to manage that. You know, martial arts is all about that, you know, and having to learn the different things. But I always use the example of Spock because it's really, you know, if we could all be a little bit more like that, some people would say, well, it's very emotionless and it's not, you know, the human way or whatnot. And I think, you know, if you come in and look at both, you know, James T. Kirk and how his emotions just go crazy, right? You know, he's just all over the place, but he lives with his heart open. You know, he's got his heart open. So if you can blend the two of them together, I think you pretty much got it, where it's like you got James Kirk and, you know, Spock, and you blend them together because you got the perfect, you know, balance of heart and mind and spirit all in one. But I think that we could all stand to learn a little bit more from Spock right now because we have a lot of James T. Kirk, you know, emotional people that wear it on their sleeve, which is great. It's not a bad thing, but we also have to make sure to manage our energies around other people too. And I think it's just really about responsibility, our emotional responsibility, you know, and looking at how we can actually take that and make this place a better place to live for everyone, including ourselves. We become happier, our people around us become happier, and we raise the frequency of some of the lower energies as well as, you know, keeping the levels of positivity running.
Yeah, well, you're talking about one of my heroes. Spock was always my favorite. And he had, I mean, he transcended emotion. He wasn't a puppet of his emotions, and therefore he could see things that Kirk couldn't see because Kirk was all wrapped up in the emotion of it, you know, and Spock always came up with the answer. So to me he was the most important character because Kirk couldn't do what he did without him.
He really did. So. He really, like, he managed that whole situation and it would get, you know, especially between Kirk and, you know, the doctor, the doctor would go off on the handle too. He was having a hard time with his emotions. Like he sometimes just went off, you know. But that's what I think it sort of emulates the fact that we're all different though. So we can't all be the same. You know, I don't feel like that's what we're meant to do here either.
Oh, yeah,
we are
exactly.
here to be who we are. If you're more of a, you know, James Kirk guy, or, you know, let that be you. Be you. We're just, I think, saying to also have some management over your emotions so it doesn't go astray, you know, in the verse of it. Because a lot of people going crazy, you know, just doing crazy stuff, saying crazy stuff and just going off the handle when we need to take the higher road, you know, the higher path.
Right. Well, that's why you just lift up one eyebrow and say, well, that's fascinating, and you move on, you know. So speaking of moving on, I want to make sure that we get cover some other stuff here before our time is up. And I wanted to... just for a minute or two, talk about the new transitional recalibration sessions that you do.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I started to feel that one of the things over the last few years that we've been dealing with on this planet mostly is transitions. You know, so many people going through so many different types of transitions, okay? And all different kinds of transitions from, you know, just some people just could be moving geographically. Some people lost their jobs. Some people had lost their lives, literally, and transitioned and crossed over. And then that left a lot of people around them, you know, with pain and suffering. And so there's been a lot of different types of transitions, job, health transitions, career transitions, relationship, you know, transitions. And so I decided to just come up with a session to help people with those types of things. So I have I have a few things that I would suggest on there. It can kind of be an open-ended if someone's dealing with something specific. I have some suggestions, but it's not limited to that. I can also help people with some other types of, you know, situations or so it's kind of an open-ended, but it helps me a little bit because in my starseed alignment sessions, I have very specific things I'm doing with people, you know, doing a soul origins, starseed readings, and then doing my light language chakra clearings and upgrade. And so I don't really have a whole lot of time in those sessions to really go through those types of things. So that's why I started to bring this out, and it's a new session, transitional recalibration. So it's helping people to recalibrate based on what's going on, like the situation or the transition that you are going through. And if you need assistance with that, there's a light language upgrade that you can do. So it's kind of like someone that doesn't want light language doesn't have to, but there is an upgrade to do light language frequencies to help with those specific things as well. So it's kind of a choice you have there. I decided to let that be a choice rather than just putting it in there. And so that's available. It's kind of a new session that I have come up with, but I've been getting the push to do it for a couple of years. It's just, I had a lot of launches that I did last year, so it's just coming out now.
Yeah. So these are, like private one-on-one.
Yes.
Live sessions that you do?
One-on-one. Some of these sessions, depending on what someone wants, cause I do them via, you know, Skype online, or a phone if it's in the U.S. or Canada or Mexico, I believe.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to be on Skype. But I also do MP3 files, so if somebody does not want that. And I've had this happen where there's language barriers, people all over the world, and sometimes people just want to have me record the session. So that's actually available on most all of my sessions as well if you want that. So you just write in, you know, what you're dealing with. And then I kind of just tune in and I'll do a recording of it, an MP3 recording. And then if it's got the light language activation portion, that will also be recorded. So there's many different ways that I offer to do the sessions. At the moment, I'm doing them all those ways I mentioned. I just don't have email sessions at the moment. I mean, I might do that, but at the moment I don't have that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of time-consuming for you.
Yeah, it's like,
let me ask if, do you have, a recording of various light languages? Like, you know, here's a message in Pleiadian, and then you do that, and then here's a message in Arcturian, and then you do that. Do you have a collection like that?
I have a light language foundations audio class, and in that audio class there's two different types of my phase. It's actually what I do in my phase two, which is my light language chakra clearing. And in that you would get, like, you know, as I'm going through the chakras, then I speak a certain light language because that's what I do in those sessions. I don't necessarily say it on the recording, though. This is Pleiadian. It's a part of the whole process. But there will be different languages that come through when I'm working with the different chakras. So I don't necessarily have – I do have that when you go onto my YouTube channel, all my activations on there. You know, it'll say, like, you know, Pleiadian upgrade or something, and then you'll know it's kind of Pleiadian. Although I do have some of these that are combination activations, so I might roll one into another, and then on screen you'll see it. As I've started to put them on screen, where I don't stop the flow and say it, it's just listed up on screen, and then when I switch into another one, I change that, you know. So
that's perfect.
Just so people are aware of what language is coming through, and then they can visually see the change or the shift of it. So I'd say my YouTube channel probably has a majority of that, where it's a blend, where I might have an image that I worked on and do a light language activation of the fairies, you know, which I just did the last one was from the fairy. I'm also doing a lot of DNA activations as well. So that's where you would probably find something like that.
Okay, great.
Which would be on my channel. So, and I'm eventually supposed to be in You know, do you know Craig Campobasso? I'm pretty sure you guys know him.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and he came on the show together when he launched.
Yeah, a while ago. That's right.
One of his books,
and
yes.
The ET Almanac, which he has out, and he's doing a documentary on that. And I also filmed a couple of years back of some of that, so that I think I'm going to be in that documentary whenever it comes out, the film. And in that, I also have some of my light language. I don't know how they're going to use it between him and I believe Frank Jacob is the one that's doing the filming on it. But however they ended up doing it, I did supply them with some light languages to utilize in that as well. So lots of different ways to bring out the light language, many different ways.
Okay, so speaking of that, I think we've reached the part of the show where I would like you
to give us some
sample activations. You know, and I mean, even though I know the first time you did that, even though I had no idea what the words meant,
the
energy and the frequency, I mean, I got the whole flavor. And,
yeah.
and there was one in particular that I really resonated with. And it's like, oh, gosh, I got to hear that again. So
I don't know. Do you remember which one it was? I do. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I remember most specifically the difference between Arcturian and Pleiadian.
Arcturian, yeah. And
I think of the Arcturians like Vulcans, because they're much more, science and math.
Yeah, they're much they're in their higher heart, higher mind energy for sure. And they actually work in the mind field. I call it the mind field.
Mind field.
Because it's
right.
like a mind when you're up there. So, but they work a lot in that area. And I was actually getting, it's nice of that, because I was actually getting that they were wanting to come in and do a transmission. I call it transmission from there, from them, but there's a lot of that going on right now. And needing to clear the space, the mind space, for all of us. This is really important right now. So, yes, I will definitely, I was kind of feeling that was coming forth. So that's probably going to come forth again.
Okay, well, I will be quiet and let you do what you do to prepare.
So, but first I just want to say to everybody, most of your people probably understand, heard light language, but if not, just put your mind off to the side just so you don't go and try to figure it out from the mind. We're really just tuning into the energy and into heart space and energy of the your body, and just allow whatever wants to shift or change, or you might jerk your body a little bit, whatever happens, just let it be. It's all coming from a really high vibrational, positive place, okay? So just close your eyes. I might roll into a one after that, so just know that. But as I tune in, just everybody kind of take a nice deep breath, and you're just putting your focus now on you, your body, your presence, and bringing in your own higher self as well, being that sort of gatekeeper. The higher self knows exactly what energies and activations are right for you. Shi nai yin soi, en soi yin shu yin na. Di xin jie ya kan yi o tong na, su ta yin tu yi su no, en soi yin di hui ni gui na, an ta yi sa han, han ya ta san. Sisa Desan tur ani un tuzur mashi tolona itusa u shichi shishan ki so tolona suto di so toyon horan tari mishiki wete ni ito horos ni ito tana asni eki wena ti o hesu ga shini titi e wanta san ani puto to mashi to u ti san harente u ka kwayente usa ka yin sa ye sensu shuya nanate unta mi kirete ni Sotorum na ke etoram. Sisoma, shishone, isitan a mi soto. Shison a shuchitiana aso. Mito, sanananta, tanananaza, tanananaka, karananaza tut. Suta, tananese, tananene, te, tanananaza tot. Uraza, sen chuyente, unsaya, unterete. Rila, suna, tanam. Una, sarientarema. Beron sarama ti ma ti wa. Rondara reira sa randira. Uruku rutir. Randari arama ranjera. Uruku krushi. Ansari arandaraya. Ura ra kavari andaraya ras. Disu roko honta rayan. Tiu randate uru sopara kurindi dire randaras. Rukurukti karandararis, tarukuratishar nartar ir irinitara. Rukukraran itar narras, marakar etenar erruna. Tisandara yarra kukrukshotar mariaran. Ura randi uruku krushi sarmara taren. Uvarat rakaran duru krushi tarmara te. Sriarene uruku rakshia anantara ramsa horokuria randiri isto rukarana terea. Ransaratira. Rukula Bariandara. And just take a nice deep breath. We're actually doing some recalibration of the mind and the heart with these both, since we've been talking about that, and just recalibrating some of the energies out there, clearing some of the external mind field energies, and then clearing the heart space to be able to receive and stay in those high vibrations and to receive some higher energies, happier energies from the galactics. We're bringing in energies of the Arcturians first, and then all the way full circle here coming around was some Lyran energies that wanted to be present here to help and open up and activate your starseed side of you as well, and those that connect with the Lyran energies really feel this connection that they want to find their people, find their tribe, find their heart, and find their home. A lot of Lyrans feel displaced because they don't have a home anymore. And so I wanted to bring that in, but also the message of home is where the heart is what the message came through. So these frequencies, when you open up to them, they have meanings, but I don't like to give too much of the word-for-word interpretations other than just some of the general stuff that comes through, because all of you out there will experience this slightly different. Some of you will receive different codes and different messages that came through with that. And some of it may just be a transmission, so you're not going to necessarily receive any translations anyway. It's just energetically shifting some of the frequencies around you. And so just allow whatever comes from these activations. And as you breathe in and just kind of feel that solidness inside of your body, and now again blending the heart and mind together as it should be.
Yeah. Wow. I love listening to you when you bring through those energies, because it's I don't know, it's something you have to feel your way through and not, you know, intellectualize
yeah.
your
analyze
way through.
It.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
It's hard to analyze. Well, I should say with those of us with analytical minds, it's actually easy to pick it apart and, you know, question it and be all skeptical about it. But I think picking, you know, being overly analytical with it, this isn't that type of, this isn't really what you analyze. You can analyze a lot of other things, but this isn't really one that helps to analyze.
Right.
Just because
right.
the nature of light language and languages of light are, some of them are more transmissions. Some of them are languages, but they do come from a higher level of what we know here as language, you know? So there are roots in some of the languages. Like, for example, I just want to say the root that I see for the Arcturian language, and actually they've shown me just the area of our globe here on the planet where the Arcturian presence, if you will, is going to be more like if you were to say not Arcturians are all on this particular country in our planet. I'm just saying, but in that region, it's morally more of the Asian flavor. So we have the Asian communities that have very similar frequencies, and actually their languages are actually derived, I believe, from some of the Arcturian. So I see some of the areas in different locations on our planet, and then I feel into the language, and some of the languages are actually, you know, where did those languages come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or where did our languages come from? We've derived them into, diluted them down, and now they have certain meanings, and it's very specific. But if you think about where the original languages came from, you know, and mm-hmm. so some of them have this derivative of it, but that's just one example. For me, Pleiadian energy, for example, has a couple of different locations that I've seen. One of them is Hawaii, for obvious reasons over there. But there's a couple of other regions that I feel also that are like Pleiadian countries, if you will. I know that doesn't make sense because it's not like there's only Pleiadians living there. And some people, we also say Norway, you know, or the Norwegian. That would be true if you're talking about the Pleiadians that have all blonde hair, which they don't all have blonde hair, but there's a subset of them that do. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, I have a different stream which runs and tells me, brings in different information like that. And like I attribute the chakras, when I do my chakra clearings, I know which language is going with which chakra and which activates which chakra, you know, at the time. So mm-hmm. That's just kind of some of my stream energy that, and some of my intel that's come through over the years. It's pretty interesting.
It sure is. And I noticed, you know, the second, the Lyran or Lyran, it had like some of the cadence of the what I remember from your doing Pleiadian light language, but it had that different, you know, like rolling the R's, and I don't
the
think
the rollings. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't
yeah.
usually do that one the Pleiadian, but with the Lyran for sure. It does have this very lyrical, very you know, it's almost like a set, it's like a song, if you
right.
will.
Right.
You know, coming out and different frequencies. And it's not like every single Lyran is going to have the same exact, you know, speech or whatnot.
Well, sure.
Or language. But this is what comes through me. As a matter of fact, I have a way of doing what's called Lysyrian, and that's a blend of Lyran and Syrian hybrid, okay? Because there's a lot of hybrid dialects as well. And so it's very interesting that my partner is actually Lysyrian. So he, you know, and so when we have that, it's a blend. So, you know, you got to think about so many different types of blends. That's kind of an interesting one, but it kind of has like the rolling R's, and then it has this staccato, like, you know, Assyrian is really kind of one of my favorite languages to actually speak is Assyrian, but it's actually quite abrupt. So you can imagine both of those together. It's a very interesting language.
Well, yeah, I'm watching the clock here, and we only have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to make sure you got a chance to mention your two Starseed related events coming up the end of March the end of April. So if you just take 2 minutes and tell us briefly about those.
Yeah, we've got a couple of events coming up. So first of all, I'm going to be doing a collaboration with a couple people that you might know. One of them is Indigo Angel, and the other one is Pink Bella Aloha. And these are two people that are beautiful souls, and I'm going to be combining all of our efforts at the end of, it's coming up at the end of this, of March, actually. So it'll be March, I believe it's 31st, and April 1st, and then April 2nd and 3rd, so all the way through there. We are going to be putting on a Starseed course together. So she'll have one day, you know, Pink Bella will have one day, Indigo Angel will have one day, I'll have one day, and then we'll come back as a Q&A. Now, we are just going to be putting this up in the next week. So if you go to my website and check it, it won't be there yet, but it will be. So I just wanted to tell people, we're going to be teaching all different kinds of topics from, I'm going to be teaching about light language as well as starseed, different things, topics for awakening the starseed blueprint and light language codes of consciousness. And we're all going to be doing activation in the third segment. So you're going to get three huge activations or processes in that event. So you'll have to just check my website, which is lightstarcreations.com, or my social media on YouTube, my community page, or on Facebook under Lightstar. And keep your eye out for that, because you're not going to want to miss that. We're all bringing it. So that's going to be great for Starseeds to learn and to get that from three different very well-respected people, if I should say so myself, for all of us to come together and create, to help you guys and to teach and to do some instructing. So I'm excited. And it's online, so you don't have to be going anywhere. You know, it's all going to be online. The second one that I want to mention is the it's the Sedona Cosmic Awakening, and that is happening the April 22nd and 23rd of 2023, and that is going to be in Sedona. And we are going to have a bunch of speakers that are going to be speaking. Some of the headliners' names we're going to be having is David Icke, actually. We have David Icke. We have Tony Rodriguez. We have Frank Jacob and Jean Nolan, Lisa Barnett, and then Shekina Rose, myself, my partner Sansletbear, Paul Wallace from Gaia, Thunderbeat, and Isabella Green, and we have John Dumas who's doing some music for us as well. So we've got a great event coming up there. If any of you guys want to get away, come to Sedona, be in the Red Rocks. And that is, you can go there to, on my website, it's on my homepage, but you can also just go to SedonaCosmicAwakening.com, and you can register there for that event. So highly, highly recommend those two things. And anything else that you would like to, like, see, all my music, my new music, the stuff that's coming out, all that stuff is on there too. My LightStarCreations.com, my Oracle decks are on there. So you can go and check all that stuff out on my website. Like I said, I have some new music that we didn't get a chance to talk about that, but that's on there as well. Powerful, powerful White Swan 555 solfeggio tones for those of you guys who like that. It's highly powered toning, and all the tracks are all connected with the solfeggio tones and highly, highly clearing, very healing. So, so those are all the things that are on my website, the two events coming up, and I think that should do it. I really appreciate you having me on here so much. Thank you so much for everything, and I'm glad you like the decks and can use them for many moons to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always a pleasure having you on, and I'm telling you that the time has just flown by.
I know.
That doesn't happen with a lot of guests. So
we have too much fun.
yeah. So I appreciate your generosity. And is there contact information on your website if someone wants to, you know, set up something with you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. If you go to my contact page, you can send me an email from the form there if you want to. I'm also on, you know, some social media. I have you can reach out in many different ways, my YouTube channel, community page, or on Facebook under Lightstar on my page, and Instagram. I'm kind of on there too, but, you know, these are areas that each social media, but on my contact page, you have a whole list of wherever I am, all my, you know, my channels, different channels I'm on, from Rumble and Odyssey and all those things. So any place you would like to see me at, it's going to be listed there.
Okay, so you've got all the bases covered.
Yeah, it's all covered there. And
excellent.
You can, you know, check out my sessions. And if any questions or anything like that comes up, you know, just reach out. And I'm excited. So it was great to talk to Lavendar. Hadn't talked to her in a long time, so I'm really glad I had a chance to do that. And I'm glad she's doing well. And you guys are doing great work, so thank you for everything you're doing.
Oh, well, it's an honor. And hopefully we'll get to meet you maybe in November.
I know. I have
you come to Arkansas.
I want to
I want
to come play with the crystals too.
Okay. Well,
like
it'll be a pleasure. Well, you know, whenever that moment occurs, it'll be a pleasure, and I'll look forward to it.
Awesome.
So, Lightstar, thank you so much for being with us this evening. And for our listeners, we'll be back 2 weeks from tonight. Thanks for tuning in. And always remember to keep gratitude and compassion in your heart.
Absolutely.
Good night, Lightstar.
Thanks so much. Good night. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.
You're welcome. Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.